Message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Know more about what matters in your life. The Pensacola Expert Panel with Jenna Barr. 9 till 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Morning, 7:38, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now we have Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, good to have you. First, before we get started on other stuff, is there anything, any incidents or events that have happened the last day or two that we don't already know about?
No, sir. It's been quiet.
Well, I'll take it. I will always take that. Now, we did have a bit of an unsettling discovery the other day over on the east side of town in the water. Some folks were out at the park and they discovered a body in the water, which I guess we have now identified, but we're still looking for more information about how she got there. Is that right?
Yes, we do know that it was a 61-year-old female, but we're waiting on autopsy results to come back to find out exactly what caused the death.
Okay, and this was, I have in my head that it was at Bay Bluffs, but it was at Bay Bluffs Chimney Park. Where was it at?
It was near Manalay, off Scenic Highway down on the beach.
Okay.
That's a little bit north of where you're talking about.
Okay, I imagine the folks who discovered it, very unsettling. You know, I just, because we always go down there with Ocean Hour to clean up the beach and just to, you know, be walking along and to find, obviously it's a sad thing to have her pass away, but distressing to find it as well, right?
Yeah, it is. It's something that you don't ever want to see. But, fortunately, somebody found her as quick as they did, for her sake and for that of the family.
Absolutely. Turning now to statewide news, the Attorney General yesterday put forward the notion that would raise the payout for information leading to a murder case being closed, almost doubling the amount of money. I think it was from $5,000 to $9,500. I'm going on memory. I had it in my notes, but I think that's the right amount. You work very closely, like with Crime Stoppers, so you're pretty well familiar with all of this stuff. Is that something, like, are we having the need to incentivize it more, and do you think that would make a difference?
I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. The higher you can go on the reward, the better, always. Ms. Moody came to our conference last week in Tallahassee and spoke to us about that, about what her plans were, and increasing it can never hurt anything. But what we want, our biggest problem in Crime Stoppers sometimes is the fact that people wait with information thinking that the reward will go up, where Crime Stoppers, our bylaws, that's not allowed. We pay the same for every crime throughout the state, and it's done on a point system. And for somebody to think, well, I've got this information, I know it's good, I'm just going to wait and see how big that reward gets, they're wasting time doing that. So we want to make sure that people know that the faster you call, you're going to make more money. If you hold that information, that's not going to help you out at all. You're going to get the same amount.
What happens if – so now I have 1,000 questions that I'm curious about. Is it a total amount of money assigned per the criminal event that then gets divvied up among, like, if multiple people come forward with information? I imagine some tips are crucial. Some tips are a little bit helpful. How does that all work out in the payoffs?
It's the first person that calls gets that reward. Now, sometimes we'll have two people call, they both have good information, and they both have pieces of the puzzle that we needed. And in that case, we can pay a reward to each of them.
And it's of the full amount, or do they split it, like, because it's only so much per crime?
That it will be split.
Okay. So there's a system, and basically first good tip gets the reward, and then if there happens to be an odd situation where it justifies it, you might split it. But generally speaking, you're trying to incentivize people to come forward with their big information quickly, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, Andrew, sometimes there's confusion. Private people can make rewards of their own, and they can make that as high as they want and pay whatever they want for that crime. But Crime Stoppers has to keep that separated. To make sure there's no confusion there. We have a certain amount that we pay for a homicide. It's the same throughout the state. And we have another amount that we pay for maybe a burglary of a car, and it's paid the same throughout the state. So we have to stick to that in order to make sure everybody, the rewards are paid out equally and fairly.
And by the way, just because, you know, we are talking about it, let's make sure that we remind people that when they call Crime Stoppers, that is, it's not just that it is totally anonymous, it's that it has to be anonymous. In other words, if somehow you inform them of your identity, you actually become ineligible to receive the money, right?
That is correct. We can no longer, I mean, we can speak to you and we can take the information, but you are no longer able to get a reward at that point because we have to keep you anonymous. That's what the program's all about. And people have messed up before and given that information and didn't even realize what they said. And it's awful hard to explain to them that they're not going to be able to get a reward, but we can still take the information.
But again, that's to protect people's anonymity and the program itself being able to have that reputation of, you know, we will not ask you, and there will be no need to give any. In fact, you can't give it for that exact reason. We're talking to Mike Wood. He is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. I know you and I often talk about the Citizens Police Advisory Committee and some of the questions that come up from that. One of the questions is this idea that if the SWAT team is going to be deployed due to some incident, that the response is going to be more robust or less robust based on where they're going, neighborhoods. And so people perceive a higher militarized response because they live in a poor or maybe a black area. But how does that actually work? Is it always the same? Is it proportional to the neighborhood? Is there any truth to that allegation?
No, not at all. The SWAT teams have protocols that they use. And we respond based on the information that we have. If a person has a warrant and no history of violent behavior, no history of firearms, or no information of firearms, you respond one way. But I can promise you that if we know that that person has firearms, they're willing to use them, we will respond to that location the same, no matter where it is in town, whether it's someplace on the west side or if it's in Cordova Park or Inverness, you're going to get the exact same response.
Yeah, because, you just don't train for response by neighborhood. You train for response by incident type. That's the real key, right?
Yes, that's correct.
We're talking to Mike Wood, Public Information Officer for PPD. Mike, hang on for me for just a second. Let me take a quick traffic on the fives with Davis Allen.
Yeah, and still seeing delays along Garcon Point Bridge. In fact, as you're going southbound, it's backed up all the way to Avalon Boulevard, it does appear. Going northbound, you're going to be met with delays along Garcon after you get off the hump, and it's going to continue to remain a little slow until you get on through the toll plaza. Now, Avalon Boulevard going northbound, I am seeing delays around Sanchez Court and also seeing some delays going southbound around Garcon Point Road. So just use caution, expect delays over there. Also seeing delays along 9 Mile Road eastbound in front of Navy Federal, backed up to Beulah Road and Highway 29 southbound between 9 Mile and I-10. I'm Davis Allen with the Traffic on the Fives.
Very good. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. Davis, back to Mike Wood with the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, you know, the governor has recently reduced or made more available the vaccinations to people 50 years and up who are teachers or are police officers. There was a bit of a halting start to this originally as the cops were getting it, and then I guess you were not getting it. Fire, same thing. You guys now are able. Are the officers vaccinated, all vaccinated, some vaccinated? How's that going?
Some are vaccinated. There were some of us that went and got it the first day that it was available, and I was one of those. And then you have other officers that have elected not to do it. And it's not just COVID. It was this way with the flu shot, too. I mean, before we're police officers, we're human beings, and we all analyze and think about things such as vaccinations independently. And the city and the police department is not forcing the officers to get the vaccine. So it's totally up to them.
All right. Very good. I know you and I have talked about this many times, but the gun buy program the city of Pensacola is going to vote on final details of tonight. I know it's not a policy that you are implementing, but it is a policy that you are going to be putting into practice. I guess you're not voting for it, but you are implementing, I suppose, a better way to say it. Are you guys already making plans for this? What is this going to look like when people actually come to Bill Gregory Park, assuming that this passes?
Well, they'll bring the weapon with them, and the first thing that we want to do is make sure that weapon is unloaded and safe, and then we will take possession of it, and ultimately that weapon will get destroyed. We hope it's successful, and you'll know if it is or not by the amount of weapons that they get and how much money goes out. Whether that program is ultimately successful or not, we'll never know. If it gets one or two weapons off the street that could have killed a small child in a home, Then yeah, it was worth it. But again, we'll never know the full extent of whether it works or not.
Obviously, yeah. And I know that we're trying to, you know, the whole idea is to reduce violence. But I'll tell you, as a gun owner, I'm the kind of guy that looks at that pile of beautiful guns and thinks, oh, you know. And I think, would there be some collectible item in there? You know, somebody brings in a Tommy gun or something like that. You know, I go, oh no, you have to destroy it. No. One of the other questions that I wanted to ask you about is kind of a cool thing. You've got a new book out on Pensacola police history, right?
Yeah, Sergeant Mike Simmons is a historian. It's an unofficially historian, but he's really good, and he's been studying that department for many years, knows exactly what he's talking about, done a lot of research, and he's got that book for sale. He recently did a book signing at the police department. A lot of good information in there, and even somebody that's been there as long as I have had no idea how old that the police department actually was, and that, you know, the documents and photographs and things like that. So yeah, it's a good read.
I like it. I'm look forward to being able to see it. You often have a cop myth for me that we can debunk. There are so many. This is a target rich environment that you see in movies and TV. You have one for me this week?
Yeah, let's talk about the show CSI Miami, Los Angeles, New Orleans. In that show, excuse me. It looks as if the crime scene analysts are the detectives, and they run down the case and they make the arrest. And that's just simply not the way it is in larger departments. Now, smaller departments, the patrol officer does everything. He's the patrol officer. He's the crime scene investigator. He's the detective. But most of the time, our crime scene people are just that. They are specialists in that area. They go to crime scenes. They collect and document evidence. They're very good at what they do, and then they forward that information that they have to investigators, and investigators go and investigate that case and ultimately make an arrest. So it's usually in most larger departments, it's two different sections of folks that investigate that crime scene.
So the dashing detective / CSI / prosecutor, the hybrid amalgam of all these different roles in real life, it's the crime scene person over here and the detective over there. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the crime scene investigators in police departments around the country are civilians, are highly trained civilians. Uh-huh. The Pensacola Police Department is one of the few that our investigators, our crime scene technicians, are actually sworn police officers.
Hey, you give me another question, and I'm just kind of curious since we're talking about it. The picture on TV is that when a murder happens, that you immediately call the homicide detectives, and the homicide detectives show up at the scene. Does that happen?
Well, we have investigators that are on call, and they do it all. They investigate everything. And, you know, you have some that investigate homicides most of the time, but and gun crimes and property crimes and persons crimes and things like that. But our investigators, they can do it all.
No.
It just sometimes depends on who is end up assigning that case.
No, I mean specific. Like, I know the CSIs come, but do the detectives even go to the site, to the scene?
Yes, they do.
Okay. So there's some truth. Hey, we found something TV does right about your job.
Yeah, that's right.
Mike Wood.
But yeah, they're just...
Mike is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you for the good information. Thanks for the time, and thanks for doing what you do. We appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
You bet. 751 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. We recently expanded and upgraded our facility and lot and are now carrying our largest inventory ever. That's more new Subarus than ever before right here on our lot in Pensacola. Shop our largest selection ever of Impreza, Legacy, Crosstrek, Forester, Outback, Ascent, and more. Now you can see and take home the all-new 2021 Outback for only $259 per month. With standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, the 21 Outback is ready for any adventure. There's even an available 11.6-inch touchscreen. The 21 Outback is loaded with state-of-the-art safety features, and it's yours for only $259 per month. Come see the all-new 2021 Outback and shop our largest selection ever at Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Carr City, Pensacola. Online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
2021 Outback model MDB01, MSRP $27,840, 36-month lease at $259 per month, 10,000 miles per year, $2,499 due at signing, no security deposit required.
guys, I'm Nicole Stacy. There are more things to do in our area than you can even imagine. So who better to share the adventure of the Pensacola experience than the team at Visit Pensacola? Share with us your experience by using the hashtag ExperiencePeakOla. Go to visitpensacola.com and listen in Friday at 9:30 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Sunbelt Conference Basketball is bringing March Madness to Pensacola. Be there March 5th through the 8th as all 12 men's and women's teams compete for the championship. Which team will reign supreme? Get your tickets today and be there for the excitement. Tickets are as low as $15 for two sessions. Kids tickets.